Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Will Lay, part of Empire Media. Hey, what's going on, y'all? How y'all doing? Happy, and also, hold on, happy, hold on, Black History Month, man. Golly, Ray, you got me off the wrong, I'm all off, Ray. Thank you, Ray. I appreciate you.
Happy Black History Month. Today is February 1st, so happy Chinese New Year to any of our listeners out there.
Yeah, true. Facts. It is Chinese New Year. So, yeah, happy Chinese New Year to that, too, as well. Respect, man. Respect.
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm moving. Put it that way. How's everybody? How are you all doing?
Everything's copacetic on this end, Chief. I can't complain, man. Just had a good laugh with our friend Ray before we started, so you know.
I can only imagine, man. I can only imagine. I didn't hear the conversation because I was trying to get the show started.
It's better that you didn't.
I'm struggling over here right now.
Me too, bro. I'm struggling hard.
I'm laughing a little bit too much, but if I continue this, it's going to be a defamation suit filed against my man going hire Davis.
Hey, yo, shut up, dude. Shut up.
You're going to get Tariq lawyer. He's coming for real.
Get method, man? You get method?
Yeah, Davis McLean. Y'all crazy.
Oh, man, this is the best, bro. This is the best. Hey, like I mentioned, we're on Empire Media at empiremedia.com. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports shows, podcast shows, such as the John Conway Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Football Team insider John Conway and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
This show can also be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in news, health, and of the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all the Empire shows as well as other great content.
I like this outline. You get me involved early, Wole. Don't forget to tweet us at the Urban Sports Scene, at Urban Sports Scene on Instagram, and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page.
Look, man, now listen, I told you that last week, man, or the week before last, whatever. And also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
All right, we'll talk about whether, here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about whether the Bengals going to the Super Bowl hurts Washington football team coach Ron Rivera's five-year plan. At 8:20, we'll debate if the Washington Wizards should trade Bradley Beal. At 8:35, we'll talk about the Rams and Bengals' advances to Super Bowl 56. At 8:50, we'll talk about Gary Russell Jr. losing his WBC featherweight title to Mark Maxayo. At 9:02, we'll give our thoughts on the retirement of Tom Brady. Finally, we'll talk about Brian Flores, former coach of the Miami Dolphins, suing the NFL for racial discrimination. We'll see.
All right. So, the Cincinnati Bengals turning around their fortunes, making it to the Super Bowl fairly quickly, you know, within the quote-unquote Joe Burrow, the Joe Burrow regime, or Joe Burrow era. Does this change your thoughts on Coach Rivera's five-year plan? We'll let you start.
Yeah, it just shows how quickly everything can turn around. I know, you have a quarterback. Obviously, the thing is going to be having a franchise quarterback, and the Bengals made the right decision. Joe Burrow has been a fantastic quarterback. He's been an elite quarterback for this team. But which is different from other organizations is that about picking the quarterback is that, you know, when we're talking about Ron Rivera's plan, he makes the decisions. So it's not like he's the coach and he doesn't make the decisions. Like, he is, it's coach-centric. That's the whole theme of his regime is coach-centric. So he is in play for that. So in terms, so him not getting a quarterback within the last, in, within the first two seasons here in D.C., that's his choice, right? He chose to do this. While the Bengals, they went the route of getting the quarterback. Now, I know, I mean, I know a lot of folks are like, well, they could have, instead of getting Chase Young, they could have got Justin Herbert. A lot of people go that route. But I feel like Chase Young had to be drafted. You know, he was, if you looked at him in college, he fit the part. He's from the area. It's a good move. So I'm not going to knock it. But, yeah, if you pick the quarterback, a good quarterback, you know, your the process of speeding things up tends to, you know, I mean, the process is sped up, excuse me. But you chose to go into seasons with Kyle Allen, Taylor Heineke, as your, like, for year two as your starting quarterbacks, and Ryan Fitzpatrick. So you chose, you know, that route that you didn't take it heavily in year two after making it to the postseason in year one. So
let me.
It is what it is. I feel like because he is involved in the process of I mean, in terms of the front office, then a little bit the 5-year plan, I'm not for it. You know what I mean?
Well, let me ask you guys this. Let me ask you this specifically, Ray. All right, we saw, you know, in the 2021 draft how, you know, the Bengals, they already had Joe Burrow. And mm-hmm. coming into that draft, their offensive line, it was, let's be honest, it wasn't great. Mm. It was, some people would say it was horrendous, and it was the reason why Joe Burrow was injured during his rookie year. But they chose Ja'Marr Chase. Do you mm-hmm. think that this, you know, do you think kind of, because we know the NFL is a copycat league, do you think that the game plan or the formula changes, you know, if you have this star quarterback and if you, let's say, you don't have the success in season one, that instead of investing in the offensive line, you go out and you get him an elite weapon or one or two to help take him over the top?
You're right about it being a copycat league, and to be honest, that's the possibility that this could happen, where a team may try to duplicate the Bengals' success. But I'm going to say no. And going back to the original question, I'm going to disagree a bit with Wole, because how I feel is, in Washington specifically, they're building a defensive football team. That's the biggest failure this franchise and this team had this past season was the defense did not live up to expectations. And see, when you're building a team, You have a vision if you're a GM, if you're a coach, and you want to fulfill that vision. I mean, Gruden had his vision before he was let go in Vegas, and he stayed true to it. And in this case with Coach Rivera, his defense has to live up. If his defense lives up to the billing, I don't think the quarterback matters as much. Because really, if you look at the Bengals defense has made the biggest leap in the playoffs. I like Joe Burrow. Of course, I like Ja'Marr Chase. However, Justin Herbert, he's a star quarterback. Well, he just mentioned him. And the Chargers didn't make the playoffs. So if you get a great quarterback, that doesn't equal success. Aaron Rodgers only won one Super Bowl, and he's lost a lot in the playoffs. So stick to your plan, which is build a strong defensive team, and then your offense can play off of your defense, running the football, controlling the clock, like you saw during that 4-game winning streak. And I think you stick with that. It's just Ron has to get that defense fixed, and he cannot have a repeat of what happened this past season. This defense needs to come out with now pieces in place that are familiar with your system and with the guys around them. I believe you stick with the 5-year plan, even though I know as a fan of the team, many won't like that.
I mean, it just depends on, like, I mean, I think a lot's evolved in the 5-year plan. It's not just a lot of folks just single the quarterback situation, right? We've debated mm-hmm. this on multiple occasions about coaching and whatnot, and you mentioned the 4-game winning streak. It doesn't have to be take five to me, if coached correctly, to your point, and you said this within your statement, like that 4-game mm-hmm. window, they're winning ball games by running the football. Well, because they were limited to their quarterback play, right? But then they tend to go back to, then you saw when they started going on that slide after the 4-game winning streak, or 4-5, whatever, the winning streak, They reverted back to what they were doing to begin the season, which was running, which was throwing the football, and you saw what happened. I've said this before. The reason why in that 4-game winning streak the defense was playing better football, it was because you leaned on the run game. But again, and all that is in play. Like, to me, it's not. I know a lot of folks just single out the quarterback. it's not just the quarterback. It's a lot. You know what I mean? In terms of, to me, and I'm gonna say it again. People can hate on me on social media. It's coaching. Mm-hmm. It's quarterback play. It's a lot that's involved. It's offense and defensive coaching. So if they coach together in terms of having this sense of togetherness in terms of synergy in terms of coaching, offense, defense, special teams, this team, like you saw in that 4-game winning streak, they would play a better overall style of basketball in terms of wins. Look at the 49ers. I'm mentioning the 49ers all the time. Does Kyle Shanahan have Jimmy G throw the ball 50 times? No, he's limited. He knows what Jimmy G's about. You know, he knows, and that got him to the NFC Championship game. If he threw the ball 50 times with Jimmy G, that defense wouldn't be as good because Jimmy G be turning the football over. You know what I mean? So he knows his team. He coaches his team to what he has. That's a thing for me. When we talk about this 5-year window, this 5-year plan, yes, they need a quarterback. Guaranteed they need a quarterback. But also, they need to coach right with the team they do have.
Well, we have all of these, and I know I'm going a little bit off script, but I have a follow-up question for you guys. I know we talk about the five-year plan. Now, we've seen over the past, off this offseason, that most coaches only have 2, maybe 3 years. Going into Ron Rivera's third year, I know, Ray, you've been adamant about the team fixing the defense because this is a defensive-first team. But where do you see the greatest need for improvement? Like, what specific area do you see the greatest need for improvement? Whether that's offense, defense, play calling, offensive line, linebacker core. What do you see the biggest need for improvement that could take this team over the top, the low-hanging fruit?
Shout out to Bram Weinstein, because I'm going to go back to what I've been saying, and that's agreeing with Wole, and that's play calling. Because if you look at what happened in Baltimore, they had a backup quarterback for a substantial part of the season, and also an important part of the season, and he played well in relief of Lamar Jackson. I believe he stepped right in and he played well. Why? Because what Wole just mentioned, they coached to his ability. And in this situation, Washington was trying to run a offensive style that wasn't conducive to the quarterback they had. It's just like when the Wizards tried to make all these acquisitions. You remember when they signed Yan Mahimi, Andrew Nicholson, they were trying to be the Warriors, positionless basketball. You're not the Warriors because you don't have Steph and Klay.
Yes.
So in this case, it's the same thing with Washington. You don't have the personnel to be a fun and gun offense. So run the football, play that old school style, smash mouth football. It's play calling, because as we saw again, I hate to keep saying the winning streak. When they were winning, they put themselves in a great opportunity going into most of their division games to put themselves in the playoffs, and they fell just short, even with all of the issues that we're discussing. So they were that close. And as we saw, dude, the San Francisco 49ers, their defense didn't play well for the majority of the season. Their secondary, everybody knew their secondary was banged up, and they were, you know, semi-suspect. Just not, no disrespect to the guys playing, but it's just they weren't good as a unit. However, they played well up front, and that offense knew how to do what? Control the clock and play keep away. And it worked out. They beat high-powered offenses like the Rams and the Cardinals. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, Washington could have done the same thing. Play calling needs to be fixed.
Bruh, like, all
right, offensively, especially.
Yeah, so to answer your question, Will, for this team, because the way they coach the team, I would say quarterback. But to agree with Ray, yes, play calling has to improve. Because I'm going to use, and folks are going to like, they hate hearing it, but it's a fact. The Niners have showed you this. That's why I hate the term genius. Like, you can't use that term for anybody and say somebody's good because you want him to be good. Like, Kyle Shanahan's a genius. Like, it is what it is. Like, you gave Kyle Shanahan, everybody is saying Jimmy G is trash. Everybody is saying Jimmy G is trash. Jimmy G has gotten to the Super Bowl and gotten to the NFC Championship game. Two out of the 3 seasons, right, of having Jimmy G. So, like, what is your argument about, I mean, in terms of in a full season. So, what is your argument about, like, so you're telling me that you have Taylor Heineke as your quarterback, and you're throwing the ball with him 50 times. Gibson is up there as one of the leading rushers in the NFL. So, you already have an advantage. You have an advantage at back, right? You have that. You saw in the winning streak, if you keep your defense off the field, they can make plays for you, and they're more of an attacking defense that can help you out if they're rested and if they're off the field. Yo, you see a winning, there is a formula for you. But if you go away from that formula, you're going to make it difficult to win ball games. Now, if you're going to coach the way you want to coach, without trying to tailor your stuff to your offense, to your players, then yes, get a quarterback that suits what you want to do. That's all I'm going to say. Get a quarterback that suits what you want to do, because obviously you don't want to coach to the talents of your ball club. That's coaching 101. That's what annoys me, is coaching 101. You coach to your talent. You don't just have a system and say, okay, fit my system. You coach to your talent.
I just want to add something, and that's a plea. I am making a plea to the Sky Turner fans just to be objective.
Thank you, bro.
Wole and I are both Russell Westbrook fans, but we can't defend Russell Westbrook's play. We can't. Okay. When he's leading the league in turnovers, we can't defend that. Not at all.
Yes.
Now, we can talk about his strengths, which Russell Westbrook is a former MVP. Russell Westbrook has a resume. That's
yes,
a different
thing. Yes,
but anyway.
Mr. Bam got a resume, bro.
Right, but we will admit when the man, when he plays bad or when he's thinking it up. But people who love Scott Turner,
for what reason?
At every sense of the moment, they try to defend his play call. Oh, he didn't have the personnel. The first year, I just said, okay, I'll accept that the quarterback situation wasn't good. He kind of inherited Dwayne, blah, 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 blah. But this year, he had more of his stamp on who he wanted on the field. I know Ryan Fitzpatrick was supposed to be the guy, but remember, Taylor Heineke is also one of his guys.
Yes.
So he had time to make adjustments, and actually he did, but again, like Wole said, he reverted back to what they did wrong to start the season, which was being a pass-heavy offense. So what I'm saying, Scott Turner fans, is come on. You can't argue with the numbers. You can't argue with the production. Just let's be honest about the situation, and let's be vocal about it, because what I've seen lately, Scott Turner's been active on social media, and
yes,
he's paying attention to what's being said. Let's put it out there.
Yeah.
Let's start a dialogue, and let's see where it goes. But as long as you continue to laud this man, to me, that validates the decision-making that has been seen thus far, which hasn't worked.
Totally agree, bro. So we posted the question on our social media platforms. This is on Twitter. @iToddIreland tweeted, he's going into year three. So technically, yeah, he has 2 years to turn around or he will be commander fired. Oh man! All right. At PDC1010 tweeted timeline has been sped up. At BcoxDP tweeted, they better have a major turnaround next year. At DC Tweet Team tweeted that turned around by having a generational talent at quarterback in Joe Burrow. One could argue that the Bengals' success is outside the norm. Most first-year QBs take a lot longer than two seasons to experience that level of success. Washington needs a quality signal caller.
Yeah, but Justin Herbert's not in the playoffs. It's a lot of quality
signal
callers. We know,
but see, Justin Herbert's not in the playoffs. But real talk, though, yeah, you're right. But that's coaching, though, because they could have been in the playoffs. Like, that dude.
Hey, that's my point.
Yeah, it's coaching. Like, yeah, but I know, you're right.
That's
though.
Exactly my point.
Yeah. Will, it's up to you now, Will. It's your turn to read some of this stuff. Read the outline, bro. Where's Will at, man? Is he still there? Did we lose Will?
My bad. I was on mute. I was trying to clear my throat. I was waiting for a pause, and then I was going to go.
Okay, it's all you. All
right. To continue reading the tweets, at Jesse24 tweeted, no, they were lucky enough to land a QB. At Bumsky Boy tweeted, yeah, no. If it was as easy as it seems, since he made it.
Sorry, my bad.
No problem. Yeah. The Jaguars would be going to the Super Bowl next year. At SJoker43 tweeted, finding Burrow is not the norm. There isn't one in every draft, even if there was. You have to be the one to figure out which QB that is. Way too many people think that this is the norm. It's silly, to be honest.
And Lloyd Parker 7 tweeted, they forgot to mention that they had back-to-back top 5 picks too. If Joe didn't get hurt, they never would have gotten Chase in the draft last year. That's a lot of shoulda, coulda, woulda. I appreciate the tweet. But all, but also, think about this. Ja'Marr Chase is excellent. But I feel like in a top receiver, McLaurin, you got that here. So quarterback will be dope. But again, it's just the defense, the team, the coaching staff, they gelled at the right time. That's what Washington needs to do. And on Instagram, Reginald Woodson, we already know he's family. The Bengals have – well, Reggie said this. The Bengals have regularly drafted pretty well. Marvin's last few years, nearly 40 of 53 players were drafted. Their key players aren't on the sideline in sweats, too. They've drafted two QBs who led them to the playoffs. Talking about Andy Dalton as well. We're clueless at that spot. 5 year on a 15-year plan. We need a capable fixture under center. That's crazy. Wood, I always love the colorful responses.
I know, right?
Keep them coming, my brother. I cannot say the word regularly fast. Just letting y'all know now. I tried to read that and say it. But anyway, should the Wizards trade start Bradley Beal? You already know how I feel. We'll discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene on Empire Media.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole, part of Empire Media, and that's at AmpireMedia.com. All right, it's been reported that everybody on, everybody on Bradley Beal's Washington Wizards team is available. Should the Wizards trade star Bradley Beal?
I'm going to say yes. Oh, my bad. My bad, Will. I see my name in red, but go ahead.
No. It's funny how you said Bradley. Everybody on Bradley Beal's Washington Wizards team.
It's his team. Like, it is his team, though. He's the only one that, like, I think he has the power to stay. So he's okay with whoever to get traded. Like, he has that type of power from all the reports. So it's his Washington Wizards.
Sorry to interrupt you, Ray.
Oh man, it's all good. What's interesting is, first of all, I'm going to say this, and Wole knows this. Bradley Beal is an awesome dude to talk to in person. Just overall seems like a good dude. We don't know him beyond basketball, beyond the locker room, so to speak. But I appreciate him being candid. I was getting ready to say that. That's why I mentioned him being a good dude, because he pretty much just said it the last two seasons. Why would I go anywhere else when the Wizards are giving me the keys to the car, the keys to the franchise? I might as well stay here and let a GM build a team around me as opposed to going to another team where I'm like the second or third option. So he's being real. Like, I know I'm the man here and I want to be the man. However, at the same time, we've seen him as the man, and the Wizards are around somewhere around between an eighth and 11th seed when he's the primary dude on the team that's going to lead you in scoring. And I have a source. Ray has a source, y'all, that is saying that it's looking like John Wall 2.0. Remember, John Wall played at such a high level, became an all-star, and then his production dipped slightly. Remember, Bill's production dipped slightly this season, but Wall had a lot of say in that locker room, and there became some dissension between, okay, who's the star of the team? Is it him or Brad? And ultimately, the franchise chose Brad. Now, Brad, obviously, he is making his voice be heard. We have heard Dinwiddie try to speak up. It was not welcome.
Yeah.
And now, basically, everybody's expendable, and Brad is set for a big payday. Who does that sound like? John Wall? Same thing. John Wall was beefing with Otto. He was beefing with Brad. He was beefing with Gortat. And everybody got shipped out. John Wall was paid crazy amount of money, and look how that turned out. The Wizards are about to make this same mistake. So I'm going to reiterate. The Wizards need to trade Bradley Beal, and it's only one destination, and that's Philly. That's it. I mean, maybe Brooklyn if Harden was on the block, but Philly wants Bradley Beal. Philly right now is turning down Tyrese Halliburton, who, I mean, just looks amazing. Did you see his game against Philly the other day? De'Aaron Fox was mentioned in a trade also for Bradley Beal, along with Buddy Hield, and the Sixers said no, along with draft picks. The Sixers want Bradley Beal, or they want somebody of his caliber, James Harden, to pair along with Joel Embiid. That's the only team I think that the only two teams would be Brooklyn and Washington that I believe the Sixers would make a deal with. And Ben Simmons, to me, is worth it. You make some other moves. I mentioned it before, bring in Sabonis as well, if you could, because I know Will T said they probably can't. But I'm just saying, I feel like Bradley Beal needs to move on.
So what do you think, Will?
So, Ray, you threw out an interesting trade scenario, which is Bradley Beal for Ben Simmons. And for that trade, I would say, hell no, I don't want Ben Simmons here. And here's why. Anytime a guy when he gets openly criticized by his teammate and his coach, rather than go to the gym, spend the summer, get better, and come back and prove everyone wrong. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, his mental health is very important, and I'm not calling him soft or anything like that, but I have my concerns of if he comes here, how will he handle the scrutiny? Right? Now, I know that Philadelphia and D.C. are two totally different sports towns from the perspective of Philadelphia fans, Philadelphia media. They're a little bit more rabid about their sports than we are down here. It's just the truth. You know, fans down here are rabid about football, not necessarily basketball. Football and then hockey, I would say. And hockey is more of it's a niche, right? It's people who are specific hockey fans, not the general public. But how would Ben Simmons react to, you know, Wole and you tweeting at him because he won't take a three? How would that affect him, right? So I have my concerns about, you know, if you're going to give up Bradley Beal, trading him for Ben Simmons.
See, I'm a fan of Ben Simmons, so I don't know. I mean, I think that would be a dope signing for the Washington Wizards. I think Ben Simmons, what he brings to the table is a lot to the table, in my opinion. He's a smart basketball player. So I think if they did get a Ben Simmons, it would be a good signing. I mean, a good trade, but I don't know, man. Like, the Wizards have a difficult situation. There's a lot going on and a lot of players that I feel like that they could kind of target. But Ben Simmons, I mean, if they can get a Ben Simmons, I think he'd be a perfect player, ideally, because I just think he's a smart basketball player. It goes to that, for me, a guy who can help you win basketball games. You can make a trade and get Ben Simmons. Like Ray said, they want him. I think if you do get Ben Simmons, you're not able to get, like, what Ray was talking about. If you get Ben Simmons, you're not going to be able to get a Sabonis because you got to pay all your bags to get a Ben Simmons, right? So it's going to be hard to get a Sabonis if you're trading, if you're getting Ben Simmons.
Let you guys tell it. You know, you could trade Corey Kispert, Roy Hachimura, Montrezl Harrell, and two number ones, and that'll get you Sabonis.
Hold on. Well, let me just say this. When we had that discussion, Kyle Kuzma at the time was not on the block, but now everybody's on the block.
Everybody's on the block.
Trust me, Kyle Kuzma is somebody who has earned his way to be a high commodity on the trade market.
Yeah,
trust me, when he's balled this year. So you add Kyle Kuzma, that Sabonis is still in play. It depends on what Daryl Morey is asking for along with Brad. That's the key. Because if it's Brad, one other player, and two draft picks, you can still get Sabonis. But Daryl Morey is off the chain with what he's asking for because he's trying to make it harder for Clutch Sports and Ben Simmons. It's just a personal vendetta at this point.
I think I do agree with you, Ray. I do think part of it at this point is this kind of I won't be bullied, you know, when it comes to Daryl Morey. He's like, no, I'm not going to be bullied. You're not going to dictate the terms of your trade or where you're going to go. You're going to get traded on my timeline. And if you ask me, he's making a huge mistake because Joel Embiid, we all know he's had his issues with his knees and his back. He's having an MVP season carrying the Sixers by himself. You need to make a trade and get rid of Ben Simmons now, because you don't know how big, how long his window is going to last.
Bradley Beal playing like that. Bradley Beal would be awesome in Philly. Bradley Beal would be perfect for Philly, if you ask me.
I think so.
Or Harden. Harden too, because Harden can pass. Harden is like one of the best passers in the league.
Oh, man, Harden is.
I think that's where Harden's going to go anyway.
To the Sixers, right? I think he'll go to the Sixers. Yep. I can see that. All right, so on Instagram, Daryl posted, he said yes, the team shows they work as a team better without him, talking about Bill. He's a turnover machine. Right now, they don't necessarily need a star. A McCollum-type player may be enough. I like C.J. McCollum. I think C.J. McCollum is so underrated. I actually think he's a good one-on-one player. I like C.J. McCollum's offensive game. I've always said that. South, Ray, you know the homie South. South says it's not Bill. It's the coach and a lack of another person who can score.
Come on, Salwa. Come on, bro. You ain't seen Kyle Kuzma has been killing this
year. Yes.
It's other people that can score, Salwa. Brad is clearly part of the issue because of his ball dominant style. He's a ball stopper.
Yeah.
He's like a lower version of Melo when he's high volume shooting.
Yeah. I agree. I do agree with that. I just think that. I mean, Brad turns ball over a lot, man. That too, he does turn, especially in game, in clutch situations. He definitely turns the ball over. Y'all wouldn't like C.J. McCollum here before we go to break. Before Will takes us a break, y'all wouldn't like C.J. McCollum.
I'll be fine with that.
C.J. McCollum here,
yeah, and then trade for Bradley Beal.
I don't see C.J. McCollum as the type of guy, and Bradley Beal hasn't proven this either. Right,
yeah.
The type of guy who could put a franchise on his back and help your team get to 48, maybe 50 wins.
Uh-huh.
And I think ultimately, if Washington is going to make a trade, now I'm not necessarily in favor of a Ben Simmons bringing a Ben Simmons in, but if you can't get an all star player who can lead this franchise, you might as well blow it up.
I will say this, though. I will say this, though, about CJ. He's way more clutch than Bradley Beal.
I'll give you that. I'll definitely give you that.
You know what I mean? So.
All right. Speaking of clutch, the Rams and the Bengals are advancing to Super Bowl 56. We'll talk about last weekend's conference championship games after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene on Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com.
I transform like this, perform like this. What shouts you a new weapon? I don't contemplate, I meditate. Then off your head. This that put the kids to bed. This that I got realness. I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again like Wimbledon. I serve, yeah, that's him again. The sound, the engine in his lightning bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tire skirt the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a your arm will probably switch inside your DNA.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole, part of Ampire Media at AmpireMedia.com.
All right, fellas, the AFC Championship game was this past weekend, of course, and the Cincinnati Bengals upset the arrogant Kansas City Chiefs 27-24. Will T, what were your thoughts of a comeback victory on the road at Arrowhead against Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid's
Kansas City Chiefs?
I was shocked, to be honest with you. You know, when I was watching that game, you know, when they went up 21-3, I actually turned the game off for a little while because I was like, oh, they're about to steamroll these guys. There's no way that with this offense and the way that the defense had been playing over the past couple of weeks, making just enough stops, that Cincinnati would be able to come back. But for some reason, I turned the game back on, I think, right before halftime. And then when, when they went for it at, I think it was like 4th and 2 with 5 seconds left, and he threw that pass to Tyreek Hill, and they didn't get the field goal, I just felt as if maybe something was, you know, I'm going to use your word, Wole, momentum started to shift towards the Bengals. Excuse me, Ray. Use your favorite word, Ray. Momentum started to shift back towards the Bengals. And, you know, they also made a comeback. The reason why, in my opinion, Kansas City lost was the lack of aggression and the lack of the ability to make changes in game when Cincinnati kind of got a feeling or a better understanding of what they were trying to do offensively.
Yeah, I think there was some arrogance. I definitely agree. I think there was definitely some arrogance there. 21-3? What's the score at the time?
Yep.
Yeah, you could tell they were feeling themselves. You know, you could definitely tell. You could see it. I think Tyreek Hill was, you know, feeling themselves. I think it was dogging Eli Apple, because I on Twitter he was talking big trash about Tyreek Hill and what's the name of the other dude, the fast receiver? Is it Hardman?
Mecole Hardman.
He threw some shade at him on social media about, you know, them advancing and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, but again, it's still no excuse to lose that lead. You have, you know, to a lot of people, the best quarterback in the game right now. I know that's shortening, right? Like that lead is shortened a little bit with you got Joe Burrow, you got Justin Herbert, a couple other guys. I'm talking about the young core folks, and Josh Allen. But you had a big lead at home. You're supposed to close it out. You know what I mean? Regardless of how high-powered the Bengals' offense is, and you got to give credit to the defense. The defense, because they made adjustments at halftime to hold down Pat Mahomes. And to be real with you, and I think we all keep it real about the Kansas City Chiefs throughout this season, and even Patrick Mahomes, this hasn't really been his best season. You know, he's been on stretches of good play, I think, towards the end of the season. But if we look at the totality of the season, this hasn't been the best season for Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, totally. What I compare this Kansas City Chiefs team to is the Rams, the St. Louis Rams, the greatest show on turf team, because they only won one Super Bowl, but they were so fun to watch. They were so hard to stop, but yet they only won the one Super Bowl. And Kansas City eliminated now, losing this big lead. The biggest comparison between these two teams is arrogance. I was watching a Tom Brady special. You know, Tom Brady retired, of course. They're showing all these highlights of his career, these different specials. And Willie McGinnis was talking about how the Rams beat the Patriots that year early in the season, St. Louis Rams, and Torrey Holt was talking big trash. Like, they were just arrogant. And they're like, all right, we see you again, we're going to get you. The Bengals beat the Kansas City Chiefs in the regular season, came from behind and beat them, and yet Kansas City kind of blew them off, like, you know, whatever. And they started out this playoff game, of course, punching the Bengals in the mouth, and they started that arrogant stuff up. And Cincinnati, like, nah, we've seen this movie before. We know we can come back, and that's exactly what they did. They became the tougher team. The finesse team went home. The tough team moved on. Nice. And Patrick Mahomes is not Kurt Warner. He's younger, and he's more mobile. He has a stronger arm. He should be winning multiple championships. Andy Reid better not lose this window, man. I'm telling you, man, because you might not necessarily get back to the Super Bowl. We know how hard it is. And we know Justin Herbert, he's coming along. The Buffalo Bills are coming. The Buffalo Bills should have been in that game.
Yeah, for real.
It's amazing how much of a fine line it is for you to be either here or there. I mean, Tennessee could be there. There's so many teams that were almost there. So there's no given that Kansas City is going to find themselves back in this position.
Yeah.
And they blew it. Period.
Yes. Yes. You make an interesting point, Ray. Andy Reid, you know, even though, you know, the stench has kind of gotten off of him because he's won that Super Bowl.
Yeah,
you know, he had that history in Philadelphia of going to 4 straight NFC championship games before he finally got to the Super Bowl, and then he lost to the Patriots. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out for him, and if that window is gone, because, you know, you do have those young quarterbacks emerging in the AFC with Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and Justin Herbert. Let's take a pause for the calls. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com. Now let's talk about let's shift to the NFC Championship game. In the NFC Championship game, the LA Rams defeated the San Francisco 49ers 20-17. What are your thoughts?
I'm going to give an opinion. I'm not even going to give a real thought. Yeah. I'm just going to say this. I'm happy for Sean McVay because they went all in and they brought in Matthew Stafford. And they also, mid-season, they bring in Von Miller. These guys showed that they felt like they could win this year with just a few additions. Uh-huh. And the guys on the team bought in. They had their ups and downs, but they got through it. When you overcome the obstacles of a long, grueling season where you're going to have adversity, especially because you play in arguably the second strongest division in the NFL, when you got the Cardinals, when you got the Niners, where you have Russell Wilson, who's a champion, Pete Carroll. That's a tough division, and you won that division. And then you had to overcome a team that swept you during the regular season. So just shout out to Sean McVay. It's so good to see it work out for him. When so many other coaches like John Gruden, like Ron Rivera, you saw their plans did not work out.
No, you know what I like about the Rams, man? I said this before, and it is like – their organization goes all in. They're not worried about draft picks. They go all in. Like Ray mentioned, we need a quarterback. We need an upgrade from Jared Goff. Okay, we're going Matthew Stafford. We need a wide receiver. I mean, we need to add more weapons. Okay, let's get Odell Beckham. We don't really need him. Let's go Odell Beckham. Von Miller. Let's go Von Miller. A couple years ago, Jalen Ramsey. Let me get Jalen Ramsey. Like they always eat. They got even before that they got Dominic Sue. Like they always re up. Like. They're cool with re-ing up using trades via free agency. It's the same thing, like, you know, like this organization, and I'm going to use Washington as an example. Anytime they get a high-powered free agent, a guy who did it before or a guy who has a well-known name, people cringe, right? Because, oh, you're not doing it the right way. You're doing it through preseason. I mean, doing it through free agency. You're not doing it through the draft or whatever, organically, right? But the Rams, what I like about the Rams, they say, screw that. We don't care about the look. We don't care about the optics. We try to win a championship. All we want to do is win a championship. If we fall on our face, we fall on our face. If you said we went all in for Stafford and we don't make it, all right, we'll deal with the consequences later. But they don't care. They go all in every year. Every year, if you got a player that's out there that somebody is crying about their prior situation and they got ability or, you know what I'm saying, or somebody's trying to phase this player out, they're like, you know what? We still think you got it in you. We want you. We'll take you. They do it every year, man. Like you got to give them credit. Even they did the same things with the cornerback now in Baltimore and Peters. Like they do this every year. If you're out there, if you're available, they're calling.
You made an interesting point, Wole, about what the Rams' kind of strategy for ensuring that they'll be competitive and be competing for championships. And it's interesting because LA is a town we know, a town of stars, right? Mm-hmm. People want star power. This LA Rams team has star power with Matthew Stafford on offense, Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham Jr., and on defense with Jalen Ramsey, Von Miller, and the great Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
Some teams aren't able to. You know, as you said, this team here, they tried to replicate that formula with getting star players. You know, there was a period, you know, we can all remember when there was a period in time where this team would dominate, after the Super Bowl up until training camp.
Yep.
You know, they were always the offseason champs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a town like LA, you have to do that.
Mm.
Because I don't necessarily think that the football fans are passionate about the Rams.
They're not.
And we know that.
They're not.
They're not passionate about the Rams, and they love star power. So they have to continue to bring in stars in order to continue to fill up that stadium. So it'll be interesting to see because they've clearly leveraged all of their first-round picks, I think, until
– for a minute, bro.
If I'm not mistaken, 2027, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So they don't have any – but their front office does an amazing job kind of filling in the gaps, though.
Yeah.
Like whether that's signing undrafted free agents and late round picks. You can do that. You can use this. Excuse me. You can use that strategy when you have a front office that can evaluate talent and pick talent and get the right players in to fit that coach's system.
There you go. That's the perfect thing, right? You just said, Will, to fit that coach's system. Like you have when you have Aaron Donald, you can get a Von Miller, right? Like you can get even if you think Von Miller is in the late stages of his career. If you think that, you have Aaron Donald who demands a double triple team, so life is going to be much easier for Von Miller. Odell Beckham, you look at what Woods was doing, and still Woods was still with the, he was there when Odell Beckham was there, but you know that all right, I have one elite wide receiver in Cooper Kupp and a top tier receiver, a good number two in Woods and Robert Woods, and now I'm adding Odell Beckham. It's going to be easier for Odell Beckham. He's going to get single coverage. Like Matthew Stafford is a good deep ball thrower. So you have now Odell Beckham with that. Cooper Kupp, him and Cooper Kupp had just like vibed each other tremendously. So it's just like a lot. You have so many. You bring in the right players. Like, and even if they were like older, right? So that's use that term, older. It's still a perfect fit.
Yeah. You know, like so, I said, you know, it'll be interesting to see how long they're able to keep this up. For now, you know, that strategy's, you know, it's got them to the Super Bowl, and now they'll be the second team in NFL history to host a Super Bowl, to play in and host a Super Bowl.
Yeah, they have the worst home field advantage, though, because everybody wins. Every visiting team, I swear, has more fans than them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like that for them and possibly Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas definitely. It's a tourist place. Definitely Vegas. Definitely Vegas.
Yep. I mean, it's starting to turn into that here.
Oh yeah. Starting. What you mean starting? It's here.
we see a lot of fans from out of town kind of taking over the stadium and rooting on their team, and it seeming as if and totally taking away the home field advantage.
Oh, yeah, they lost that, bro. They lost that a long time ago. It is what it is, man. Bay Ray, you take us to the break, man.
Well, hey, family, if you're not aware, we're going to be going overtime tonight. We're talking Tom Brady's retirement. But before we get there, WBC former featherweight title holder Gary Russell Jr., should he retire? Should he follow Tom Brady's footsteps? We'll discuss this after the break. You're listening to Urban Sports Scene, Empire Media, empiremedia.com.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback.
More a solo performer. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. Foot suckers and beer. Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom. Explosion. Overpowering. Over the competition. I'm towering. Wreck your shop. When I drop these lyrics that'll make you call the cops. Don't you dare stare. You better move. Don't ever compare me to the rest that'll all get sliced and diced. Competition's paying the price.
Are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Ray Jeezy, Will T, myself, Wole, part of Amp Pyre Media at amppyremedia.com.
I guess it's on me then.
Duh! Last week. Awkward silence. Go ahead.
Sometimes a little bit of silence is cool, man.
Yeah,
look,
man, you're right. Sometimes it is.
Ray, you can attest to this. You're married. Sometimes you know you found the right people in your life because you could share some silence with them, right?
Watch Ray.
I'm so lost, but go ahead, bro.
All right.
Oh, man.
Last week.
Damn! I hate you.
It's like, no.
All right.
I can't.
Last week, Mark Masato upset Gary Russell Jr. to become the WBC featherweight champion. What are your thoughts on the fight, Ray?
Oh man, I'm so all over the place on this because I just thought about it before the break or during the break. You had said, "Dang, Ray, you retiring, Gary?" And I was like, "Of course not." But I know during the fight, I had tweeted or texted you guys and said he should just retire and pour his energy into Antoine, who is clearly the up and coming fighter, a little younger, and just looks to be the one who's going to go out there and get the big fights and win these big fights, as opposed to Gary. For whatever reason, Gary could not land a big fight. So I would be okay if he did. I don't think, based on how he lost his fight and based on the circumstances leading up to the fight, of course, we know he was injured. And the reason why he fought is because, A, what I was told from his camp is that he hasn't had a paycheck in 2 years. He had to do this. It wasn't no ifs, ands, or buts. And the WBC told him, "You're going to be stripped if you don't fight. We don't care if you're injured or not." Apparently, he's fallen out of favor with PBC because he's spoken out against Floyd Mayweather. So basically, he was backed into a corner like, dude, we are empathetic to what you're going through, but your inactivity started way before your family issues, so you need to defend this title. And Gary was like, "You know what? Fine, I'll do it. Plus, I got to get paid." So he went out and did what he had to do. Now, with that being said, my thought on the fight, and I'm sorry for not necessarily answering the question directly, but for a man with one arm, that brother Maxayo showed me nothing.
I felt as though Gary
won some rounds, and it just because of this Showbox and CompuBox. And I mean, even the commentators seemed slanted. So I just felt like the odds were just too stacked with the brother passing, his father, the injury. You got the PBC and Showtime against you and the WBC. He couldn't have won the fight. With two good arms, Gary Russell would have won that fight. And from what I heard, even the King Tough fight, the PBC wanted him – not PBC, I'm sorry, WBC wanted him to lose. But because he controlled the fight for, the first 8 rounds, there was nothing that the judges could do. I mean, I'm serious. When I talk about corruption and how he's fallen out of favor across the board. So – he fought an awesome fight. Ring generalship was off the chain. But at the end of the day, I still feel like he lost because he only had one arm. He didn't land enough. But again, Maxayo did not beat him. He didn't take it from him.
Yeah, I was annoyed at the fight because I guess after the fight, Maxayo was like, "I hurt his arm." Like, bro, you hurt his arm. Don't lie. Like, don't do that. I hate when people boxers take credit for stuff they didn't do. Like,
Freddie Roach said the same thing.
Yeah, like that annoyed me. Like, he didn't. Like you said, Ray, he pretty much, like, he won a few rounds just off of one hand. And, like, I was saying, like, I remember just doing the cards. I was like, it's closer to what people, like, these dudes are saying. And I just felt like, I said, these dudes seem real biased. It's like they're exaggerating every punch that Maxayo had. But everything, like even the punches didn't go through. They were exaggerating it. And then when Gary was hitting them clean, they just ignored it. Like it was like little pot shots, boom, boom. But the only person that recognized it was what's his name?
Abner Murray.
Yes, only one who recognized it. And I was like, "Yo, like what are y'all doing?" But I mean, when you look at the car, it is what it is. Like he had one hand and he lost one arm, and he lost. And I said, like, yeah, you know what? He lost like the last. I think the last 3 rounds were it for me. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, he's not winning. He's not active enough.
Right.
And it was over. Like, but for a while, I was like, yo, it's way closer than what y'all saying. Like, all Gary got to do is win, like, this round, the next 2 rounds, and I think he wins the fight. But he just wasn't active enough. And
it was still close.
And it was still close. And that's what I was telling folks on, like, social media who were like, "Oh, man, dude, beat Gary." I was like, "Dude, with one, you're taking pride when he beat him with one arm. He beat him, like, one arm, and he got it 114 to 114. Like, it was 115, 113 on two judges' cards. When dude fought with one arm for predominantly most of the fight. Like you said, Ray, dude didn't even take advantage of it. Dude was, like, didn't show me nothing. Like, the next big fight he has, I don't think he's winning. And it's not, it is what it is. Like, I think he's limited.
He's fighting Ray Vargas. Yeah, he's been ordered to fight.
Yeah, so I think he's limited. But in terms of the fight, I was annoyed because I just felt like, I know if I'm Gary, I'm thinking like, yo, I lost to this dude and I had one arm and then folks are going to try to write me off. And then obviously, like you said, the beef with PBC and Al Heyman. So it sucks, but I mean, it is what it is. I mean, he had to go out. He went out there and he did show toughness. Again, to go out there one arm and to show, to me, one thing you did, he did lose, but he did show the world that he can box, man. He's a boxer. You know what I mean? Like Will talks about the sweet science. Obviously, like, he has that down. It's just it's unfortunate that the dude's not as active as we all want him to be. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm going to just talk about the things I know and I kind of saw.
Yeah,
right?
Go, Will. Like, go, Will. You do that, bro.
No, because Ray, you brought up a couple of interesting tidbits, you know, when you were making your points with regards to kind of the politics and boxing. So one of the things that I do know, and I actually sent you guys the story because it seemed a little odd to me, was that, you know, before the fight, Gary Russell Jr., he kind of alluded to or called out that he had an injury going into the fight. And that was odd to me because you typically don't hear of a boxer alluding to, hey, I've had this injury prior to a fight, you know. You often hear about that after the fight, whether they win or lose, you hear about that. So that's one of the things that kind of struck me as kind of odd. The second thing is, and Wole, you spoke about this, how close the fight really was. I believe Gary, he had that injury to his arm in the second or
fourth,
third,
fourth round.
Yeah. Excuse me. Thank you, Ray. The fourth round. And you could clearly see, you know, him wince, and you clearly saw his ability. You know, he's pretty much stopped throwing a jab. Uh-huh. But what he was able to do was he was able to avoid a lot of the punches that Masayo threw, and a lot of whether he, you know, made Masayo hit air or Masayo was just hitting his shoulders and hitting his elbows or hitting his gloves. But you know, if you, and I really didn't listen to the announcers. I kind of turned the volume, down, because that's just how I like to watch boxing. Cause I don't want to hear, I don't want to be swayed by an announcer. Mm-hmm. And if the punch, you know, and if it is a punch that hits or lands hard enough, you'll definitely see the reaction from that fighter, whether it be, spit, sweat, or anything kind of, you know, fly off of their body. But one of the things that kind of struck me was from that fourth round on, Masayo wasn't able to dictate the pace of the fight, meaning he wasn't able to clearly and effectively, you know, cut the ring off and get Gary Russell in danger when he had him in the corner. But Gary was able to avoid those shots and throw a straight right that will often connect. And you can tell it could connect from the facial expression and body expression of Masayo. Having said that, I still had Gary losing by one point, particularly, I believe it was rounds 10 and 11 to me is when the fight was lost for Gary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Rounds 10 and 11, that's when Masayo started to take over and actually land some effective punches.
Yep.
But I know that, Ray, you stated that Masayo, he already has a mandatory. But I'm wondering, would Masayo say, hey, I want to run that back with Gary Russell Jr.? All right? Because there'll be... It'll be interesting to see, you know, kind of the reaction from Masayo going forward, because everyone knows you clearly beat, you know, you won that fight, but you won it against a one-armed boxer and a guy who, if he had two healthy arms, would have beaten you.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see, one, would Masayo be interested in giving Gary Russell Jr. a rematch? Two, would the PBC, because, you know, from things that are being reported and kind of floated out there, PBC, Gary Russell Jr. not being in the favor of the PBC at this time, would they allow for a rematch, right? Because they promote or manage Mark Masayo. And three, you know, if a not if, but when Gary Russell Jr. comes back, does he decide to go back? Does he decide to go to 130 and take on some of the more lucrative and higher exposure fights that are there for him, 130 or 135, at 130 or 135? So that's all I have.
Well, we posted this question on our social media platforms on Instagram. I don't know who said this, Role, but somebody said he should only press on if his heart is 100% in it.
Oh, what?
And he still wants to compete as a prize fighter. Told y'all on my last visit, I guess this is Wood. That's what I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's Wood.
Brothers on YouTube act like only Top Rank does brothers wrong. But for some reason, Gary wasn't able to get the bag with the Santa Cruz or Davis fight for multiple years. At least Bud got a $20 million while not getting the big fight. That's an excellent point. But what's crazy that is after the fight, one thing that Russell's camp pointed out was that Gary could have easily, when a doctor examined him, y'all remember, right after he got injured, he could have quit there and said he couldn't fight no more, and he would have retained. And he still would be champion. And the PBC and the WBC, everybody, the sanctioned bodies would have been pissed. Because, see, Gary is getting blamed also because they're saying he didn't take fights that we offered. He wanted Tank. Tank wasn't going to take the fight. He wanted Santa Cruz. Al wasn't going to give you Santa Cruz. He wanted Haney. Al wasn't going to give him Haney. There wasn't enough money or, according to some of the experts, there wasn't enough interest in the fight, although we know amongst boxing fans there was. But anyway, I kind of agree with that. I feel like Gary should have took the Errol Spence route. Just fight who they put in front of you. You know, I would even sign with Eddie Hearn. He was saying it was BS money. You know, he wanted to be a free agent. So it's some mistakes that he made, just in my opinion. But I know Gary would definitely refute that and say, you know what, nah, the WBC and the PBC, all these people have been working against me. Because he said the Ray Vargas fight fell through just because they scheduled him to fight somebody else. So it's a lot that went into it. But I will agree, he fought on like a warrior because that's who he is. He didn't quit and retain and get the payday like he could have, which would have been the easiest thing to do. And all the real boxing, you know, pundits know it. You got Sean Porter that came to his defense. You got Andre Ward that came to his defense saying pretty much he fought with one off and damn near won, and McSayo didn't take the fight. Freddie Roach is delusional, but you know what? They want the next Pacquiao. That's what the media wanted.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, speaking of somebody who did actually retire, I hinted at it earlier, the great Tom Brady has officially retired. We're going to discuss this after the break. Are we still going to take a break? I don't know.
Yeah, let's grab the break. Let's grab the break, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, let's grab the break. I already know Wole's playbook. I'm getting there.
Yeah, my man. Hey, Will, just take us home, bro. Take us home, bro.
All right. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tom Brady has officially retired from the NFL. What comes to mind when you think of Tom Brady? Ray?
Okay, so I've been giving long-winded answers without giving an actual answer.
What's wrong with you, bro?
And it's so difficult because, like, Tom Brady, I feel like, again, when he got to Tampa, you got to see more of his personality come out.
Yeah.
But if you rewind to the start of his career, Tom Brady was so humble and just so eager to learn.
Man.
And, I mean, he pretty much followed Drew Bledsoe everywhere. So he desired to be great, and he achieved it, although, as he acknowledges, some luck went into it, including the Tuck rule, including the Chargers fumbling away an interception. So much went in his favor. It's amazing. But you still got to respect the man being in that position to win a Super Bowl so many times. So there's not much more you can say except he dedicated himself to football and to being great, and he achieved it. And it's great to see him now move on his terms because he was right there in the thick of it again this season with a team that was depleted.
Yeah, Tom Brady is like so polarizing to me because I do acknowledge him as the GOAT of quarterbacks. I do. I'm not going to even play it off. Like, I'm not the biggest Tom Brady fan, but I'm real. Like, he's the GOAT of quarterbacks. That's what it is. That's what he is, and that's who he is. But like Ray said, like, there's a lot of lucky stuff he got in England, bro. Like, that Tuck rule, he just stole Charles Woodson's Super Bowl ring. Some of the calls that the Patriots get, like the Patriot way, you know, and being blessed to be with Bill Belichick, regardless of what people say, who's what, but you're still with Bill Belichick, one of the best defensive minds, the GOAT of coaches. He is. He's the coaching GOAT right now. If we look at GOATs of coaching, he's it. So you were teamed up with that because we saw what Bill Belichick did with a rookie quarterback, non-COVID, because I think a lot of people went non-COVID with a rookie quarterback non-COVID, and he took his team to the postseason. But going to Tampa, seeing a great opportunity to win a championship, and probably be one of the more talented teams he's had over his career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Because there's one thing about Tom Brady, and we all could say this offensively speaking, not as a whole team, but offensively speaking, he never really needed the best wide receivers in the world to win. You know what I mean? Like, he had a particular style. He won with limited, like, Deion Branch, when he left New England, he wasn't the same. We know Randy Moss, but I'm talking about the other guys like Wes Welker. When they met Tom
David
Brady.
Patton.
Yeah, David Patton. When they met Tom Brady, mm-hmm. they became good receivers. You know what I mean? Like, no, Edelman. Like, what was Edelman before Tom Brady? Like, it is what it is. So he's won with, to me, you know, not the best talent in a wide receiver core. So he's the GOAT. I give him credit when credit's due. When I think of Tom Brady, I think of a dude who gets away with a lot, man. Like, the dude will yell at referees all the time and, like, not get a personal foul. It was funny, though. He got one this year, though, which I was so happy. In the playoffs, he got a personal foul for yelling at an official. And to me, he is too, like, he gets away with murder with yelling at officials. I think he is the most rudest quarterback I've ever seen in my life. I feel like I'm hating on Tom Brady a lot right now. But congratulations, he's the GOAT. Whatever. I had to be real about Tom Brady. I'm not the biggest Tom Brady fan. Will, what did it come
to? I'm just going to say, I'm not gonna go on for too long, but I wanna congratulate him on a career, you know, that most people live a lifetime in, sports fans live a lifetime and never actually get to see a guy compete at that level of greatness and achieve at that level of greatness in any sport, especially football and at the quarterback position. That's one. Number two, it's interesting to, you know, it'll be interesting to hear, you know, some of those stories that kind of come out, because the stories always come out, yeah, about guys and kind of them as a teammate and their level of competition. So I'll be interested to hear those type of stories about Tom Brady. And three, what was interesting, if you read his announcement, was he didn't mention New England at all during his press release. So I don't know if he still has some bad blood towards Bill Belichick or anything like that, but he'll be, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of his transition away from football and what comes next for him. You know, will it be the health and nutrition TB12 route, or will he try to, you know, get into some type of ownership group or something like that? So I just want to, it'll be interesting to see kind of that next level of his progression and what he does away from football.
So we posted the question, what comes to mind when you think of Tom Brady on Twitter, at @th3artofwar, tweeted, the greatest cheater of all time. Seriously, he has too much scandal behind his career, in my opinion. I mean, it's New England. Okay. They all have, like, it's the New England way. You ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm not going to say cheating, but if you aren't pushing the boundaries,
yeah, that's better, right?
Of what's legal, if you aren't going right towing that line and saying of what's legal and what's illegal, then, you know, you aren't doing it kind of the New England way.
True.
All right, the perceived New England way.
Facts. Okay. All right, let's go into, you know, something that was like that broke later today. Brian Flores, earlier today. Thank you for correcting my man. Earlier today, former Miami Dolphins coach Brian Flores is suing the NFL for racial discrimination. Will T, your thoughts, my man?
First thought is, if he had any desire to be an NFL coach, that's pretty much gone out the window now. You're suing the NFL and the 32 teams. But I took a little bit of time and I read some of the highlights of his lawsuit. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting ones was he included a text
from Bill Belichick,
a string,
right,
of text conversation. Yeah, with Bill Belichick. And it was interesting how Bill Belichick kind of, you know, he thought he was reaching out to Brian Daboll, but he, you know, text Brian Flores. And from those texts, it seems as if Brian Daboll had the job before, you know, the Giants had already decided on Brian Daboll mm-hmm. 3 days before Brian Flores went in for the interview. Mm. So that was interesting. Two, the conversation that he had with Stephen Ross, when Stephen Ross offered him an extra $100. I don't know if he was playing or whether he was serious, you know, offered him $100,000 for every loss because he wanted to get the top pick.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if that top pick, whether he wanted Joe Burrow or, you know, Justin Herbert or mm-hmm. or maybe he wanted Tua or maybe he thought he had to get the top pick to get Tua.
Yeah.
So I found that interesting. And three, some people will say Brian Flores is filing this lawsuit because he's mad, because he was possibly unjustly fired and he wasn't able to get a second opportunity, one of the second opportunities at one of these franchises that he preferred.
Uh-huh.
But a guy like Brian Flores, I'm not going to, you know, him taking the initiative to file this lawsuit is something that's possibly needed for the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. For there to be true change within the Rooney Rule. You know, the Rooney Rule, a lot of people, and I'm one of the people who agree that the Rooney Rule is a bunch of BS. Mm-hmm. It's complete bullshit, right? Is let me check off this mark of interviewing a minority to say I've done. I've checked off that box. You know, it has to be kind of within the upper management, senior management ownership. They have to want to embrace diversity, right?
Yeah.
They have to want to embrace a guy who possibly has a different perspective on things, but is able to get the job done. So, I'm interested to see how this thing plays out. For Brian Flores, you know, I think he is definitely a capable coach, you know, especially based off of what we see recycled.
There you go, bro.
You know,
that's what it is
from the NFL. Yeah, if we see what's recycled in the NFL on the from a head coaching perspective, you know, you think about, I don't know. Let's think of, you know, not to drag him into this, but let's think about, well, no, Ron Rivera had a 500 record when he was let go from Carolina.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's definitely been guys who've had a sub 500 record
who's got multiple opportunities.
Second opportunity. Yeah, look at Adam Gase, right?
Look at Josh McDaniels. I mean, Josh McDaniels always talked about getting another job.
Yeah, he's always talked about getting another job. And one of the things that that's come out about Brian Flores is he was difficult to work with in Miami.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the things, the issues, and he even admitted this himself, Josh McDaniel was difficult to work with in Denver.
Yeah.
Right. So then now he gets a second opportunity. You know, I don't think that when Josh McDaniels was let go from Denver that, you know, all of these salacious tidbits were released to the media about him being difficult to work with or him wanting this or him wanting that. But it's crazy how Brian Flores was essentially slandered after he was let go from the Miami Dolphins.
This is why it's
about
obvious.
Him being essentially an angry black man.
Yeah, this is why it's obvious to me. Like, this is like, I mean, to me, it's wrongdoing. I don't care what it is, but like, for 2 years in a row, this team has been a winning organization. You with a rookie quarterback the second year, I mean, his third year, right? Look what he's done in two out of three seasons with that ball club. No one looked at that ball club as any world beaters, and he had a winning record. You know, he could have went to the postseason this season. I mean, but, you know, they lost to Buffalo. They beat the Patriots. I believe they beat the Patriots twice. Beat the, you know, Jets, like, they did well in their division. Year before that, they almost made the postseason with Ryan. If Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't go down, who was pretty much their best quarterback that season, if he doesn't go down, they have a great chance to make the postseason. He's been a good coach. He has pedigree. He's come from New England, and he's done so. You know, he knows about he's familiar while winning a championship because he was under Bill Belichick. Like, dude, he checks all the boxes of a good head coach. So even if Miami doesn't want him, you would think another organization would be quick off the brakes to get him. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Bears would have should have gotten him. There's so many dudes. Like, the Giants should have been – he should have had the Giants job. Like, I am annoyed that a coach with this caliber is not getting an opportunity. He's young. He has dudes playing hard. If you watch a Miami Dolphins team, you can't tell me them dudes don't play hard. Like, you can't tell me they don't play hard. Like, he is what you want in a coach. I don't care, white, black, Hispanic. He is what you want in a coach. And he can't get a gig? Are you serious? Like, I've heard people say that. People came out their mouths and say, for Washington, like, he should be, man, they should get him as a defensive coordinator for Washington. I was like, what? Hell no. Like, he should never take a coordinating job. Should never downgrade himself to that way. He is a head coach, and he's a darn good head coach.
So I'll push back a little bit on the Giants and the Bears job. Only because, you know, with Tua, you saw that, I'm not going to necessarily say there wasn't a plan to develop Tua, but you didn't see I'm reading Ray's.
Yeah, Jim Zorn. He said Jim Zorn.
Yeah.
Got a
head coaching job.
Facts.
No, one of the, you didn't. Yeah, that's facts. You didn't see the progress. You didn't see the progression from Tua. So if I'm the Giants and hold on. If I'm the Giants and I'm the Bears, you conceivably do have questions about his ability to coach the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
Right. Because you didn't see the progress from Tua that you thought you would see from Tua. And you didn't necessarily see a game, a scheme, or a system that played to Tua's strength. And that those teams have young quarterbacks who they believe in, so conceivably you could have a question.
He's so dirty.
I'm sorry, people, for laughing. And Ray just sent us a very funny text that I'm not going to relay.
Don't relay online. Cancel culture.
But no, it's you know. So if you're the ownership, and executive management of those two teams, you did have some question about his ability to groom a young quarterback who you believe in, because you saw how he went through a different offensive coordinator every year. So,
I will say, but like, this is my point, though. See, I think he did. I think Tua got better last season. If you look at his completion percentage, it was good. It was dope. He won. Like, Tua did. God, when he came back from that injury, he got on the winning streak. They were better with Tua. Like, they had the quarterback, Brissett. As soon as Tua got back, they were a better football team. I thought he did well with Tua. But year one, I think year one was a little bit off, right? Because I felt like ownership wanted Tua to play, but he would prefer Fitzpatrick to play. So you did see the battle in year two. You saw the battle. Yes. But year three with Tua, when he got the job, you say it's on Tua or you say coaching, but they were a better team, and Tua got better as the season went on. And we talk about how, and I don't know if it was the GM and was it Flores involved in someone picking some of the players, but we talk about with Ja'Marr Chase and what they did with Burrow. They did the same thing with Tua and Waddle, and you saw it work out, because them two had good chemistry, and Waddle had a great rookie season. So I thought Tua got better, in my opinion. I like Tua, so I look at the stats, I check him out. Like, Tua got better, but I know what you're saying. Like, you may want an offensive mind for Daniel Jones. I get that. I'm not even going to argue, but I do think under Flores, Tua was better in year three.
All right, I mean that. He started to progress towards the end of the season. Well, no, Tua was strongest during the
He was strong toward the end of the season.
Yeah, he started to progress.
He was throwing for 75% completion percentage, and was one of the highest for a stretch. Until he played Buffalo. And Buffalo was different. Buffalo was a different animal when it comes to that passing defense. But everybody else, he did work against, man. He did work.
But it'll be interesting to see, how does Brian Flores' situation pans out. And two, watch out for the messaging in the media. And there, and I'm sure there'll be other salacious or stories that won't paint Brian Flores in the best light as a leader and as a head coach.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what bothers me. Again, like, you see the jobs that some of these coaches get. I mean, some of these other some of the chances these other individuals get. Like you said, second chances, and even some who haven't, you know, they're coordinators but haven't shown you a lot. You know what I mean? Like the jobs they're getting. Jacksonville better hire Byron Leftwich too. FYI, like I'm like so angry. It's like Black History Month, but I'm like all over it right now.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Lane Kiffin, that's right, Ray Lane Kiffin. Yeah, with the
Raiders. It's interesting that it was going to be interesting because, you know, there was a thought that the Miami job was Jim Harbaugh's to be had.
Yeah.
Because the connection between him and the owner.
Yeah.
But I think reports are starting to break that Jim Harbaugh's going to go to the Vikings.
Vikings. They say the Miami, a lot of people still think there's a chance he'll go to Miami, but the Vikings look like they're the front runners right now. They do look like they're the front runners. Did it break? Yeah. They say that he definitely going there? They say they're working on a deal right now?
So it's saying that the plan is for him to become the next head coach of the Vikings.
Okay. No, I mean, I knew Jim was, once I heard that he was thinking about it, I knew he was going to leave Michigan.
Jerry. But, I mean, okay, let's think about Jim Harbaugh, right? Mm-hmm. The same things that were said about Brian Flores were said about
facts.
Jim Harbaugh.
You're right. You're so right.
When Jim Harbaugh was leaving San Francisco.
So true. So true. Jim ain't easy to play.
He's getting a second chance.
Yes.
But, you know, Jim Harbaugh has led a team to a Super Bowl and a team to three NFC championship games.
Yeah, but see, this is the thing. Like, when we look at, or this is my issue, when you look at, like, Brian Flores is young, right? He's relatively young for a head coach, right? Like, you got a young head coach who's over five, like, who's giving you two back-to-back winning seasons. You know what I'm saying? Fighting for playoff spot. Like, that's rare, man, at a young coach that can do that. That's rare. I'm sorry. Like, you don't get that often. And to your point, Will, it's not like he has, like, you got a young quarterback. It's not like you got elite quarterback play right now, but it's a young quarterback. You dig what I'm saying? It's not like you're doing it with, like, Drew Brees or whatever. You're doing it basically with dudes who are working hard. When you look at, I talk about here in D.C., when you look at, like, Washington's team, like, you can, sometimes you're like, dang, like, where the effort? Like, y'all not putting enough effort. But we look at Miami, it's like they're giving you everything. Like, their team, and that comes from the coach. Like, that comes from the top. Like, they're training these dudes the right way. They're coaching these dudes the right way to play that style of football.
Yeah, and also, to Brian Flores' credit, he also took over a roster that was terrible.
There you go, bro. It was a horrible – yes, that's what I'm saying. Like, you don't get that often, bro. That, it annoys me. It was annoying that he was fired, and it was annoying that he wasn't hired off already. He, to me, should have been the first dude hired. The first dude, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like this whole little cycle to us, the cycle – with, like, Eric Bieniemy, you know what I mean? Like, now, like, Jacksonville playing with Byron Leftwich and, like, and Brian Flores, man. Like, these are actually, like, the real good coaches. They're real good coaches in the NFL. Shoot, Jim Caldwell, like, are you serious? Like, come on,
Jim,
bro.
Caldwell hasn't been able to get another opportunity,
yeah, are
man.
You serious?
Which is crazy.
It's insane, bro. It's insane. But yeah, it's time to let's close the show out. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene. Also our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Make sure you like it. Make sure you subscribe to our Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Empire Media at empiremedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire Media shows as well as other great content. Hey, man, thank you all for listening for overtime with the Urban Sports Scene. Ray, you've been cracking me up with tweets. With the text. I'm not going to say what you've been texting, but they've been hilarious. I appreciate you. Hey, Will, always a pleasure. You know what I mean? We always
always a pleasure to hang out with you guys, man. You know, guys are family to me. I love you both.
I love you too, man. You know, and also to the folks, I mean, you know, again, happy Black History Month. It's the start. It's
and happy.
And happy
yep,
what?
February 1st is also happy Chinese New Year.
Yes. Happy Chinese New Year. Is Bruce Lee Chinese? I didn't mean that.
Let's end the show on that. Okay,
I just meant that. I don't mean it that in a rude way. I'm just saying. Because I like him. I know what? I'm not even doing that. Like, all right, you're right. Hey, anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
Hey, Mecca, leave us out, big homie.